Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we've talked about health care reform quite a bit on this program, as you know, even today. And over time, we've tried to include many different voices, angles, and viewpoints on the issues. My next guest does that too, but in a very different way, on stage every night. Anna Deavere Smith, the writer and performer who has been said to have invented a new form of theater with her one-woman plays, in which she portrays, embodies the many different people that she's interviewed on a given subject. She first broke through in New York way back with this style with the Crown Heights riots with her work Fires in the Mirror, and she's now turned her attention to the human body with Let Me Down Easy, playing at Manhattan's Second Stage Theater. She's played the National Security Advisor on West Wing and is now appearing in Nurse Jackie, and she joins me now. Anna Deavere Smith, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you just describe your process first? My impression is that you work very much like a documentary filmmaker, only instead of editing the film, you edit by what moments you choose to recreate on stage.
Well, you just said it all. I don't think you need me to say. Yes, that's a great description of it. I go around with a, used to be a tape recorder, and now it's different kinds of digital things, and I interview people, and then I get a lot of interviews, in this case for Let Me Down Easy, over 300 on three continents, and then I narrow it down to, with Let Me Down Easy, an hour and a half, where I play 20 different people using the interview views and striving to be as close to verbatim as I can in the portrayals that I make.
Let's hear an excerpt from the play. We have several, and we'll play one right now. We've linked to a video of the on the Second Stage website on our show page, and here is Anna Deavere Smith as Phil Pizzo, Dean of the Stanford University School of Medicine.
Because these individuals are under tremendous, tremendous pressure to see more and more patients in a unit of time, to make up for all the lost overhead that goes into this defective healthcare system. That's what I worry about a lot at this juncture.
So that sounds more like a policy lecture than a character in a play, but that's one of the vignettes, really. Is that where you started with this work, kind of a commentary on healthcare reform?
No. I started with the work in a very unusual way. I was asked to come to the Yale School of Medicine. They had a visiting professorship available, and they wanted me to come there. This was back in the late 90s, believe it or not, to interview doctors and patients. At the time, they were very interested in looking at the things that needed to be done to make a better relationship between doctors and patients. And so I went to Yale with the invitation of the then head of internal medicine, Ralph Horowitz, who's now at Stanford as the head of medicine. And I created for Medical Grand Rounds a performance. Medical Grand Rounds is a lecture series. It doesn't usually have actors, but I guess that's the creativity of Dr. Horowitz. And that experience at Yale was so rich for me that over the 8 years that followed, I became interested to just do interviews with people about what we're calling at Second Stage the power of the body, the price of care, and the resilience of the spirit. So I've talked to all kinds of people, ranging from athletes like Lance Armstrong to supermodels like Lauren Hutton to people who are, you know, vulnerable in hospitals. Joel Siegel, who I'm sure you remember, the great movie critic for ABC News, is a character in the play.
And you talked to Texas Governor Ann Richards.
Yes.
Near the end of her life, and here is a clip of you as her.
I would love for you to meet my oncologist. Her name is Dr. Phan. She's Vietnamese. I said, well, Dr. Phan, do you have children? She said, no, I'm married to this hospital. You're my girl.
You want to talk about that clip?
Well, Governor Richards is first and foremost just a brilliant, or was a brilliant speaker, great with the turn of a phrase, and a good friend of mine. And after she got esophageal cancer, I went and interviewed her right before she was about to have a very progressive treatment called proton therapy at MD Anderson Cancer Center. And she was full of, you know, life and full of optimism. You know, sadly, we lost her within, I think 4 months after I had done that interview. But she was really fighting the fight till the end and talks about how we all have chi, our life force, our spirit, and that we've got to keep a hold of that in order to fight, as she says, the physical thing that we have. And I think that part of the play addresses the part of the play about the resilience of the spirit.
And Ann Richards also brings up another theme in the play, which is that of class and access to health care. I mean, we're all united in the fact that we will face decline and death, but you seem to find big differences in how we face that.
Sure. I mean, and that started at Yale, too, way back then. And then it's very obvious if you start going around and talking to people in hospitals. I mean, you notice that it's very, very clear that people who are poor are more vulnerable. There's one character in the play, Dr. Kirsten Kurtz-Burke, who was working at Charity Hospital in New Orleans at the time of Katrina, and I went down to New Orleans after Katrina, and she talks about the sort of life-changing experience she had there as a white middle-class person, realizing that people in the, you know, wealthy people were getting out of hospitals on helicopters, and her patients at a public hospital 5 days into Katrina were still there, still not out, the last ones out. And so one of the themes in the play is that it does point up the disparities, and obviously the poorer people are more vulnerable. At the same time, one of the characters who had a lot of advantages also was a victim of some sloppiness in the system. So it's one of these, unlike my other plays, which I think some people could say, well, it doesn't have to do with me. I think Let Me Down Easy shows how vulnerable all of us can be to the system, and then, of course, to the inevitability of the fact that the rumor's true, we're mortal.
I've read that you take great pains, and I've seen it on stage too, to accurately recreate subjects who in this play range from celebrities like Lance Armstrong and Eve Ensler to doctors and ministers. Is that because you have journalistic standards, or is it part of your art?
That's the first time that question has ever been put to me that way. I'm a little bit stumped. It's because that's how I see the world. And, you know, I see the world as this kind of, I think about life as a kind of rock that's cracked open, and you see inside of the rock all these different colors of sparkles that you might not see if you just walk past the rock. But when you look closely, you see its diversity. You see the magnitude of its diversity. And so I try to bring that to the stage, what I know is in nature.
Do you see yourself as on one level a journalist?
That's flattering. I certainly use some of the techniques, but I think, you know, I learned that there's a difference that I learned when I was writing my play, House Arrest. I asked a very, very good journalist if he loved the president, President Clinton, who was president at the time. And he said, well, that's not my, I said, do you like the president? And he said, that's not my job. My job is to be objective. And this was at a dinner party. And later in the evening, somebody said to me, do you like the president? And I said, that's not my job. My job is to love whoever I'm interviewing. And I don't think that a journalist would ever say that.
And I think back to the very first time that you were on the show, which was for your piece around the Crown Heights riots here in New York in the early 90s. And it was clear that you loved the subjects from both sides who were so at odds with each other they could barely face each other's humanity. And so I guess that love is really a part of your work. It's not the first word that would come to mind, but I hear it now that you say it.
Yeah, that's the bottom of it. So I don't think a journalist would say that. That would be seem to be something that's in the way of perceived objectivity, but it's just something that's very the root. Any young actor who's watching, listening to the show would know that that's one of the first things we learn when we come as teeny tiny little actors to learn about things, is that we are to be in love with the subject, and that's what I try to do.
Anna Deavere Smith, my guest on WNYC. And looking back to the play about Crown Heights and then your subsequent play about the L.A. riots in 92, you looked at moments when racial and class differences erupted into violence, and there were risks in portraying the people on the extreme ends of those conflicts. Do you sense the same danger with this issue?
It could be, but I didn't write that kind of play. Brian, I went out to, you know, this as again, you know, I started working on this 8 years ago and went to three continents to do it, did work in Africa. I did get scared in Africa when I decided to go to the north of Uganda. You know, this one in August, when things started to inflame in town hall meetings, I went out to Montana and Colorado to follow the president to his town hall meetings and went to some demonstrations on the right and did get a little bit nervous about it, mainly because of what was in the press. But when I got there, I found that, frankly, what I was reading in the press was a little bit overblown. And regrettably, that material didn't end up in the play because the metabolism of the play had already been created. And I think of Let Me Down Easy as the – it's not the political story. You know, it's – that play is being played out very well in Washington. But I see Let Me Down Easy as the part that politics can't speak because politics has to speak in – winner take all. It has to speak in black and white. And, you know, what we try to do as artists, of course, is to show the human story as a complicated story that's about shades. It's not about black and white.
Has this work informed your character on Nurse Jackie?
Oh, isn't that a great question? Not really. That character is...
That's a very formidable hospital administrator.
Well, she's just the product of the brilliance of Linda Wallum and Liz Brixius and the other writers who work with her, Rick Cleveland and Christine Zander. You know, she is the administrator that all of us dread. And what I love about her is she's an authority figure who basically has no authority whatsoever. She goes switching around the hospital like she runs the place, but Nurse Jackie, Edie Falco, runs the place. And I always play authority figures somehow is always what I get cast as, but I rather love playing this authority figure who amounts to one of the authority figures in the circus. I mean, it's really about the clowns. It's not about her.
How did that happen with you? Because you started with playing characters from the street in Crown Heights in L.A., and then suddenly you're the national security director on West Wing.
You know, I think because... on TV, I guess I come across what I look like. You know, I'm tall and, you know, I'm the professor. You know, I taught at Stanford. I teach at NYU. I had an institute at Harvard. And so I open my mouth and I sound and look like that. And that's how I get cast. What I love about Gloria Acolytis on Nurse Jackie is that I sound and look that way, but again, it has no effect whatsoever.
Okay. Do you have a favorite character in this play? Is it fun to be Lance Armstrong for a few minutes or whatever?
Well, it's fun. You know, I interviewed over 300 people for this. So, and a lot of the people that I love are not in the show. Very painful to let them go. And I guess the 21 characters that are left are all my favorites.
And I read in the New York Times Magazine profile of you that Jake Barton, who's helping to design the National September 11th Memorial Museum, cites you as an influence in his work, which involves actual documentary material. He was a guest on our show this past September 11th, and I'm curious if you thought about doing a piece on what happened that day.
I did. Of course, that would be an obvious thing. But I think it was just so overwhelming, really, that I couldn't. Maybe eventually I could think about a way to do something, but it was too overwhelming. I wouldn't have known how to get my hands around it. And also, I wouldn't know who to go to in terms of the perpetrators. I wouldn't have access to that, right? So I didn't see how it could really be one of my stories.
And we leave it there with Anna Deavere Smith. Such a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.